Okay, we are back. Everybody back? Okay, good. So first I will ask if there are any announcements. We were just talking about, so this is for the recording, we were just talking about Hurricane Sandy and its impact on the East Coast.
Do people want to get together at GSA, which just popped into my head?
Okay. So if anybody's interested in, who on the phone is going to GSA?
Don? Am I the only one? You're going, aren't you, Tamara?
We have Karen McNeil is going. Susan Burr is going to be there. So they might. I am not. Most people know I am leaving on Thursday.
Oh, that's right.
3 weeks. I'm going to the South Pacific.
Great.
I'll share pictures of total solar eclipse with everybody when I get back, but I won't. And it's 17, I have looked it up. Fiji is 17 hours ahead of the East Coast. So I won't be calling into the Climate Literacy Network calls.
And your biological clock will be totally fouled up.
Yeah, that's for sure. So I won't be going. Don, what might be worthwhile is sending, if you want to send an email to the Climate Literacy Network and then see who is going. I know, like I said, Karen McNeil and Susan Burr. Susan Burr is going to do the presentation for Clean. Karen McNeil is going to do the presentation for Earth Labs. Jeff Ryan will be there because he was a co-convener for this the session. I worked with him to co-convene a session. So he will be there. And I guess just so other people know, at least in another session that I was helped co-convene, Michael Mann is going to be there. So I don't know if you want to see if you might engage him in getting together. I don't know, but he's going to be giving a talk there too.
Cool.
Okay, any other announcements?
Just the one from Clint Eagle. Hope everybody got the Spanish version of the final layout, and it's working fine for them. We're still working on finding a home on the web for this, but it should be printed and available for others. I would assume probably in the January, February timeframe.
Okay.
And are you looking for a governmental agency home or a nonprofit or what?
No, the official home is the globalchange.gov website. I have the home, I just don't have a way of putting it in the home.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So, Frank, did you send that out by email?
I did.
Or you did? Okay.
I sent it out to the Climate Literacy Network, and hopefully everybody got a version of that.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
Well, once you do have a home, we can provide a link to it from a Climate Literacy Network and Clean Sites.
I mean, we should do that. We do have a range of documents that we've produced over the years that we should post on Clean or Climate Literacy Network or things of that nature. So, I mean, I would think this is one of those documents.
Yeah.
But we've had others that we haven't really found a home for that we should probably explore.
Okay, great.
Sure.
So any other announcements? Okay, well, if not, then we will move on to our presentation today. Karen Holwig is going to talk about NAAEE's environmental literacy assessment. Karen is a science and environmental education consultant. She started off as a school teacher in middle schools and high schools. She's done community-based education, and she's provided teacher professional development, so she's an educator for every possible audience. She's a past president of NAAEE, and her presentation, the Prezi presentation, the link to that, as well as PowerPoint slides and a PDF version are available on the website. And her talk is, as I said, NAAEE's Environmental Literacy Assessment Framework. And so, Karen, I will turn it over to you.
Thanks, Tamara. And I just want to start by thanking Don Dugenhaus as a friend and colleague in the Climate Literacy Network for egging me forward to do this in a Prezi format. Don has promised to provide backup technical support if I need it, but I'm going to be following the Prezi presentation. If you can't get onto that, the PowerPoint presentation PDF is in the link on the Clean Network as a backup. So the first slide just tells you about the support that we've gotten for this initiative to develop a framework for assessing environmental literacy. The primary funding was from a National Science Foundation grant, but we've also received financial support from NOAA and the National Marine Sanctuary Foundation. And I want to thank all of them, in addition to Don, for helping us move this forward today. The next slide just distinguishes between what an assessment framework is and is not. For those of you who haven't been involved in things like the NAEP framework or other kinds of assessment frameworks, an assessment framework is guidance for people who are creating an assessment. It's not the assessment itself. And what it does is it describes components and contexts that will be assessed in an assessment based on the research and sets forth specifications for the percentages and types of items of each of the components that will be included in the assessment itself. With an assessment being anything from a test with multiple choice test items to survey questions or any kind of an assessment, can have an assessment framework. What it is not, and what I will not be talking about today, obviously, is a specific test itself or questions that will make up a test or the standards or guidelines that make up a curriculum or teaching strategies that are used to deliver on those. So I just wanted to put that up first off so that everybody's thinking about what this is. It's just the overarching framework that could guide people in creating an assessment. And the reason why we wanted to do this is that there's increasing interest in environmental literacy or literacy for a specific topic like climate literacy. And we feel that it's important to have a comprehensive research-based description of what environmental literacy entails and a framework set forth so that there's sufficient consistency across and within assessments of environmental literacy, and so that we can then make cross-comparisons among those assessments. If everybody's defining environmental literacy different and assessing something different, then the kind of meta-analyses that are done to really gain greater understanding will not be able to be done. So that's the driving force. Excuse me. That's the driving force behind having an assessment framework and why we did this work. The environmental literacy assessments that have been done so far are the ones that were done by PISA in 2006 and by the National Environmental Literacy Assessment in the United States over the last 4 years. And so naturally, when we put together the project team, we included as the team members the primary people who had been working on those two set assessments of environmental literacy. Starting from the bottom of this slide that lists the project team, you can see that Roger Bybee and Pablo Zito represented PISA in the 2006 PISA assessment and the preparations for the 2015 PISA assessment. We included Bill McBeth and Tom Marcinkowski, who are both longtime environmental education assessment people, who are part of the team for the National Environmental Literacy Assessment that's sponsored by NOAA.
Oh, good.
and US EPA. And then I served as principal investigator and Jason Taylor as the coordinator of that project. We use the definition of literacy that PISA has created, and that means that literacy is the capacity of students to apply knowledge and skills in key subject areas and to analyze, reason, and communicate effectively as they pose, solve, and interpret problems in a variety of life situations. Their definition of literacy is quite different from an assessment like TIMSS or specific state-level achievement tests, in that it's not assessing what students should have learned in any given course. It's assessing whether they can apply the knowledge and skills that they have acquired over the years to real-life situations. So that's when we use the word literacy, that's what we're meaning. And obviously, because environmental issues like climate change, by their very nature, are interdisciplinary, the team that we pulled together for the workshop that worked on this was also interdisciplinary. And we worked hard to make sure that the disciplines of the social studies and educational psychology and ecology, science, were all represented, as well as people representing urban populations and more suburban populations were also represented. There were assessment specialists, there were people from various agencies, and we really had an interdisciplinary team working on this intentionally, because we wanted to gain broad acceptance of this to achieve our goal of getting a framework that could be widely accepted and used. And out of the project came three products that are listed here on this next slide. Obviously, we needed to agree on a definition of environmental literacy. Then we needed to define the components that would go together to measure environmental literacy in an assessment. And then we wanted to apply it to some examples of assessment. For today, I'm going to focus mainly on the second product, which is the components of environmental literacy. What goes together to make up environmental literacy? And I'll be saying some things about the interrelationships among those components, because those are important in informing us about and explicating the research base for environmental literacy. So here's the definition that we came up with, and it's derived from work in the last 40 years, starting with the UNESCO-sponsored conferences in the 1970s. It's an internationally and quite widely accepted definition of environmental literacy. And it says that an environmentally literate person is someone who, both individually and collectively with others, makes informed decisions concerning the environment, is willing to act on those decisions, and participates in civic life. We also felt it was important to say that one is not either environmentally literate, yes, or not, no, but that there are various degrees of environmental literacy, depending on the extent to which you have the knowledge and understandings of environmental concepts and issues, the extent to which you have a set of cognitive and affective dispositions towards the environment, and a set of cognitive skills and abilities, and also the appropriate behavioral strategies to make sound and effective decisions. So with that, I want to take you through the components of environmental literacy, and I guess before I begin, I want to say that what I've decided might be most helpful as we go through this is, instead of just talking about environmental literacy in general, to deal with each one of these, to tell you what we did in setting forth a framework for assessing environmental literacy in each of these components. And a little bit about the research basis for that component. And then to ask you, as you're listening, to think about the implications for each of these components in terms of climate change education. And at the end of each one, I'd like to try taking a short break and have you either ask questions or talk about its application to the climate change work we're doing. So let's start with the knowledge component. And as I'm talking through this, I will talk to you about the way we define knowledge and the what we included in that component of knowledge. Think about it in terms of climate change education, and then we'll reflect on that a little bit before we go on to dispositions. So here's the diagram for our project about the domain of environmental literacy itself. You can see on the left-hand side knowledge, and under it dispositions, and an arrow indicating the interrelationship between those. To the right, competencies, and again, arrows showing interrelationships, and on the far right, environmentally responsible behaviors, and the interrelationships among all of those. And because of the research base, I'll talk a little bit about those interrelationships as well. So let's delve into knowledge, first of all. In our work, we define knowledge as scientists that we talk about regularly on these phone calls, all the physical and ecological systems and the knowledge about them that one needs to have to really come to grips with these issues. And also the social, cultural, and political systems that intersect with those earth systems. And again, I want to emphasize that people will have different depths of knowledge of these systems. We don't expect young students to have a full range of scientific knowledge and understanding of all the complexities of the natural environment, the built environment, and the social, the associated issues and problems. Nor do we expect that of all adults, but we expect some depth and varying degrees of knowledge of these physical and ecological systems, as well as social, cultural, and political systems, including things like economics and legal systems and legislative processes and so forth. So I think the first two bullets are pretty obvious. Then in terms of environmental issues, it's important that people have a knowledge of the variety of environmental situations and issues that can arise, both from biophysical impacts in the natural world, things like Sandy, or the explosion of a volcano, those kinds of natural occurrences, and in terms of things that arise from human-caused conflicts and occurrences in the environment. Then in terms of multiple solutions to environmental issues, this includes developing an awareness of a number of forms and dimensions that problem through which problems can be solved, and having students enable them to understand the historical perspective and to stimulate an analysis of the effects of different kinds of problem-solving strategies, some of the unexpected consequences, and to enable students to really understand the different kinds of approaches that have worked in solving problems and enlarge their repertoire of understanding about how one can affect environmental issues and work to solve them. And then finally, the citizen participation and action strategies, from community service to actually working on campaigns to affect consumer behavior and economic actions and so forth, and knowledge that real-world actions draw on a combination of strategies. Most environmental issues are solved not just by one silver bullet, but a whole collection of strategies that are interacting. And there's been some research done that's analyzed the relationship of understanding citizen participation and citizen actions with behavior. But and there's been some research on some of these other elements of knowledge. But a lot of the research has been done on the next component, which is disposition. So I'm going to get into that more in depth next. But before I go on, let me ask you whether there are any specific questions about what's included in this knowledge component.
Well, this is Tamara. One of the things that I've sort of thought about a lot over time is what is actually the difference between environmental literacy and climate literacy. And because a lot of when you talk about the specifics, even in this list here, it sounds to me like they're pretty much the same, but I think it actually is the perspective with which you come to it, in that while when people talk about climate change, they're generally talking about the bigger global picture or larger scale picture, and there's a lot of discussion about making it relevant to the individual who you want to engage. Whereas environmental literacy, I think, actually starts from the local issues, the local problems, and addresses basically the same kind of issues, but from the other end of that spectrum. And so in looking at this list, it looks to me like things like multiple solutions to environmental issues. Really, you're. I think you're probably talking about it in terms of a particular. If somebody's dealing with a particular environmental issue, that there may be multiple solutions to it. However, it could be from the climate literacy perspective that the environmental issues vary from place to place, and there could be multiple solutions to an individual issue depending on that. It could vary from place to place. So, I think this dealing with that. Trying to see what's different, and I think it's the perspective with which you come to it that points to the difference between climate literacy and environmental literacy. Does that resonate with others, or are there other aspects that you think could differentiate them?
This is Dan Zales calling. Thanks for letting me participate in this. I got the email a little late, so I just joined in, but I have a thought about that. You know, it's the idea of, in terms of, if you think in terms of problem-based learning, where you have more straightforward type problems, and you know there might be a straightforward solution, and that could be about the sustainability of the environment independently of climate factors, or it could involve environmental sustainability connected to climate change. Then that could be those sort of like kind of scientifically oriented problems that have a fairly or technical problems that have a fairly easy solution versus, you know, more like dilemma-type problems on the other end of problem-based learning that are much thornier, involve different stakeholders with different competing interests, involve politics and social issues, such as, like, you know, declining water resources and what's the crisis around that and how does climate change, how is that a factor? But then there's a whole bunch of other factors that arise in that, and then so I think it's around the framing of the problem, and that I think that's really important to think about is the problem framing in relationship to the domain. And I think you could have a dilemma type problem just around climate change, but you could also have a one around climate change in relationship to a bunch of other environmental issues that become crises as a result.
Yeah, I agree with both of you. And as Tamara mentioned, if you have, and as you implied, if you have an environmental issue that's more specific and local in context, then you might address that problem quite differently than if you're taking a global perspective and trying to address the whole suite of things that lead together to climate change and all the things that influence those. If you go back one slide on the Prezi presentation, you can see that arrow at the right that's labeled context, and I think that's part of what we're talking about here, is whether you're talking about an issue that has a personal or local context or one that has an incredibly global context, like the whole climate change dilemma.
Yeah, actually, I want to add one more thought to this. And yes, thinking in terms of climate change detection, mitigation, and adaptation dimensions to break down thinking on this, you know, detection carries its own sorts of challenges in terms of problem-based prompts, and so does mitigation and adaptation. And maybe thinking, and maybe that's a useful way of breaking thinking about this too.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, let's keep going. We may come back to this, but I want to make sure we cover the whole field of what we've defined as environmental literacy before we get too much in depth about the entire perspective. So if you'll click forward to the slide that's labeled dispositions, and let's look intensively at that element of environmental literacy. And dispositions are important determinants of environmentally responsible behavior in a both in a positive and a negative way. And I want to start with the first one, their sensitivity, which focuses more on the natural world and has to do with caring and positive feelings towards the environment, formative life experiences. There's a rich literature, research literature, on the way that formative life experiences contribute to sensitivity. And this factor, sensitivity, is significantly predictive of behavior according to the research that's been done on it. The next one, attitudes and concern toward the environment, is more focused on environmental problems themselves. And it has to do with learned predispositions to respond in a favorable or unfavorable manner towards specific events or reference. And the research that's been done on attitudes and concerns toward the environment shows a relationship between the attitudes and the behavior that is moderate. Others of these elements have stronger predictability and influence on behavior. So let me go on to the next three. That are all associated with problem-solving behavior. And the first one of those three is the personal responsibility and personal commitment and thoughtful work that leads individuals to reduce behaviors that either are significantly negative or increase positive behaviors, as well as undertake behaviors that contribute significantly to positive impacts. And students assume more responsibility with age, and obviously their sphere of influence grows. So assumption of personal responsibility changes a bit as students age and get older and their world enlarges. The next one, self-efficacy, defines the belief that I can make a difference, I can do something, and I can actually achieve it. And Lynn Cherry has talked with us about this before because it's central to her work. Self-efficacy is the belief that either individually, acting alone, or working with a group, I or we are going to be able to influence and bring about environmental change. The research shows that it's predictive and that if someone thinks they'll succeed, they're more likely to act and actually engage in the behavior that's being talked about. And then finally, motivation and intention to act is a willingness as well as a verbal commitment to act based on one's beliefs and attitudes. And the research for intentions indicates that it's a very strong correlate with and predictor of environmentally responsible behavior. So all three of these last three bullets under dispositions get people to engage in and be involved in decision-making and problem-solving, and there's a research literature that supports that. These are things that I think we've talked about on the Climate Literacy Network a bit. We wrestled with them when we were reviewing with Frank the essential principles for climate literacy, and they're also reflected in the energy literacy principles. But I'm not sure that we directly address them in an everyday way. So I'd like to hear your thinking about these dispositions and their role in climate change education.
Karen, this is Tamara. Are you looking to impact these dispositions or identify what people's dispositions are?
In terms of assessment, it would be identifying where people are with regard to mm-hmm. these dispositions. And then the question is, how do they get those dispositions and what kinds of things are happening in their lives, either through formal or informal education or their family lives, that impact those decisions?
It seems to me that if you were just to ask these kinds of questions on an assessment, you would get people saying what they think you want to hear rather than what they really do. Is there a way of getting at what they really do?
I'm thinking your question prompts me to think back to one piece of research that had to do with observing students in a camp setting. So there have been direct observations of behaviors based on interviews with students and those kinds of approaches. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
And this goes back to what we were talking about before, which is the scale and scope of the issues that you're talking about.
This is Frank. I really appreciate the framework's work here, and we began to explore the connections of this in various meetings in the NAAAW meeting just recently that we had that symposium. But the implications of dispositions on the work that we do here is really quite interesting. But the practices that we would do to actually build the sensitivity and the locus of control is a whole other conversation. But
yes.
One of the things that we've already touched on, but I'm wondering if there isn't further discussion on, is this idea that the environment is something to focus externally to ourselves, meaning that humans are, we're over here and the environment's over there, and that's one of the real issues, is the disconnect between human and natural systems. They're not coupled necessarily cognitively, even though they are absolutely coupled in reality. And where I'm kind of going is that usually the work that we're talking about is isolated to an environmental education program or an earth science program or a environmental science course, and that's pretty much it. If you look at the national standards for social studies, it's deeply embedded in that. And the guidelines that that NAAW have really begin to capture some of these connections, but we still are a subset of the real work that's before us, if you follow where I'm going.
Yes. I agree with what you said, Frank. I also want to take just a quick look at sensitivity as an example of what you said, I think. And that is, the work on sensitivity started out asking environmental professionals about what turned them on to the environment, what drove them to making the decision to work for the preservation of wilderness, for instance, if people were working for the Sierra Club or Wilderness Society. And the original work back in the, I think it was 70s, early 80s, showed that experiences out of doors were really meaningful. But the other factor that has come out in the literature is the role of a person, either someone in the family or a neighbor or a friend who went outdoors with them, bringing in the element of a person being important to development of the sensitivity as well. And I think more recently, people who are working in sustainability education also would bring in there a caring for the rest of the people in the world and the rest of the people even in your local community. So it has both, it originated from a nature level perspective, but has come to expand to include the people in the environment element as well. But certainly the what you're saying, Frank, of we are part of the environment has to be part of this ultimately.
Right. I mean, I absolutely appreciate what you just said, Karen, because it has practice implications about how would we build the sensitivity or, you know, the coupling as opposed to this is important as well. And I think the framework really does a nice job of focusing on areas that are really critical for our community to begin to expand into.
Okay, so thanks, Frank. Let me quickly go on to the next slide, which focuses on that section in the center called competencies. And these are influenced by and by the dispositions and knowledge and also influence behavior. And this is the core of the assessment framework because the competencies are the things that any assessment focus on measuring primarily. And those are the ability, and each one builds on the next one. So we start out with the ability to identify environmental issues. That includes the ability to describe and provide evidence for the dimensions of an issue, the human disagreements that are central to it, the factors that cause and contribute to it. And it also requires the identification and use of appropriate media sources and judging the validity of information and the value perspective in the various sources. So it's really unpacking an environmental issue. The next one, asking relevant questions about environmental problems, as well as the human dimensions of issues and the historical and geographical features, includes the ability to ask higher order questions aimed at discovering conditions that have implications for that issue. And then the next one, analyzing environmental issues, includes the interpretation and use of knowledge regarding. Can you all hear me?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Sorry, my phone's beeping and I just wanted to make sure I was still connected. So analyzing environmental issues includes the interpretation and use of knowledge regarding physical and ecological and socio-political systems, and also the information about stakeholders and the various beliefs and value perspectives that make one set of stakeholders see an issue different than another. And the ability to determine causes and the scope of issues and to predict likely consequences of issues, as well as positions from each of these factions and the reasons for difference in perspectives. So it really gets at how an environmental issue is extremely complex because it entails a whole variety of different perspectives and value systems and ways of looking at issues. The next one, investigating environmental issues, by gathering new information about an issue, either from existing sources or doing original research surveys, for instance, or water testing or those kinds of things, and being able to synthesize the information that's gathered and communicate the outcomes of the investigation. Those of you who are familiar with the Next Generation Science Standards will see a lot of those kinds of competencies embedded in this list. And then evaluating and being able to make personal judgments about environmental issues and constructing both dispassionate evaluations and explanations based on your beliefs and the beliefs of other stakeholders, articulating views about actions that may be warranted, and whether I, for instance, would have the values deeply, strongly enough held and the time to work on resolving an issue. Critical thinking, of course, is really at the core of this competency, and it includes being able to develop criteria to judge both my personal perspective and what I want to do about an issue. And then the next one, using evidence and experience to defend positions and resolve issues, has to do with constructing and defending a sound evidence-based argument about what it will take to resolve or help to resolve an issue. And in classrooms, to get at this particular factor, some people have used role-playing. Other people believe strongly in engaging kids in real issues in their community, either, as we said before, at a local level or at higher grades, getting at more at larger levels and contexts. And then finally, to create and evaluate plans to resolve environmental issues, and assuming responsibility for acting frequently with others in a group, and engaging in planning based on the environmental conditions and available resources and sociopolitical contexts, and working to actually resolve the issue. And obviously, many of these draw directly on the knowledge that we talked about in the first component and have great direct relationships to the dispositions, like efficacy and intention to act, and those more affective qualities that are under disposition. I want to say one other thing about this that's not listed under competencies, and it's an area that is currently very active and in the forefront of the environmental education research for many people. And that is the ability to work collaboratively with others. And as we see issues becoming more and more complex in this day and age, people are saying, you know, there's some specific skills and abilities that go around working collaboratively with others. And there's some research that's been done, especially over in Denmark. It started with a fellow outside of Copenhagen who has done a lot of research in this area. And so that's a whole other element. And in fact, it's interesting to note that PISA has decided that in 2015 they're intensively discussing how they're going to evaluate and assess the ability of students to work collaboratively as one of the elements of PISA 2015. So that's a quick run-through of the competencies. I see that we're running a little short on time, but I'd like to throw it open to anybody who wants to make a statement or ask a question. about these competencies in relationship to our climate work.
This is Dan again. When it comes to sort of the dispositions and the behavior stuff, have you been thinking about forms of assessment of that kind of outcome? Just wondering, like, where you're, you know, where you're going on that.
Well, there's a group right now working with some of the state affiliates of NAAEE that are trying to develop proposals, funding proposals, to work on the development of performance-based assessments that is based on this framework.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, and the work that PISA has done and continues to think about, and the work of the National Environmental Literacy Assessment, I do not know other efforts that are going forward right now. Those are the three that I'm aware of.
Karen, there's a competency that I'm surprised is not here, and that's communications. It shows up in all the literacy frameworks. It shows up in the definition on slide 5, but it does not show up here. Any thoughts as to why?
Well, you're right. It doesn't show up as a word, but it is embedded in several of these. And the fact that you don't see it when you look at the list is a shortcoming that I think is important, and I hear what you're saying. However, communication is really considered to be, if you read the whole document and the description of each of these, it's a really important part of that is an outcome of the analyzing environmental issues. It's an important part of asking relevant questions, I believe. And also, in the description of investigating environmental issues, the element is communicating outcomes of the investigation itself. And then, of course, in creating plans with others, obviously that can't be done without communicating with the people that you're working with. And then this ability to work collaboratively that I just spoke about is, at its core, is not only working with others but communicating with them to facilitate that work. So I think it's embedded across all of them, but you're right, it doesn't come out as a standalone competency in and of itself.
Well, you know, I appreciate that, but you know how it goes. If you don't call it out, a lot of times the subtleties are lost. And I think communication skills, as we all know, is critically important to this work. So, you know, it's not a criticism. It's just an interesting situation.
Yep.
Hey, this is Don, and I want to tell you about what I've been pondering as we've been looking through this, and that's interacting with a couple of adults in a back-to-back conversations about the Marcellus Shale, who I think both of these people, by pretty much any measure, any common measure anyway, including what's in front of us here, would be considered both scientifically literate and environmentally literate. They've both been active in environmental movements, both long careers in the sciences, and fundamentally disagree on the Marcellus Shale, and what should happen with it. And I think it's interesting food for thought to look through these things with an eye towards that issue. And I guess my question is, what are your thoughts?
Well, I'm not deeply involved in Marcellus Shale right now, but I am deeply involved in open space issues in my region of Colorado. And I totally agree with you. I see bright people in Boulder, Colorado, totally disagreeing about specific environmental issues and the solutions or the direction that we should be working to resolve those issues. And I think that's part of what environmental education from the beginning has been about is saying, okay, let's enable people who disagree because their values are different. They're looking at it from different perspectives. They're stakeholders of different elements of society. And enable them to develop the skills and abilities to come to grips with those and have an informed conversation as opposed to a yelling match, which sometimes our debates in our community boil down to, about how we're moving forward. And given, for instance, the ecological and earth systems and relationships that we all depend on for life, how we're going to come to grips with and resolve those issues. Mm-hmm. And environmental education does not teach the right answer for every issue, but attempts to enable people to engage in those decisions within their communities. It's for me, it's sort of like the question of what is the right education system? And different communities differ on that and have come to different answers. And here we're talking about enabling us all to keep living on our planet, which is more life-threatening at its core than a decision one makes about an education system. But that's my initial reaction, Don.
This is Eric. I think it's related to that. A competency or disposition about being willing to question your own beliefs and the beliefs of everybody that you know you tend to agree with or generally agree with. And I think one of the things that comes up with the climate change issue is that, and it's kind of related to this as well, is if you acknowledge all the things that are leading into climate change and all the things that we would have to do to deal with it, I think some people don't even want to go there. You know, it's so deeply within them that the consequences and the changes would be so large to their fundamental beliefs that they can't bring themselves or to think differently about it. So somehow being able to penetrate that and get to, okay, if I really believe this is true, what does that change about everything else I believe? And that's difficult for all of us.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, this is Dan again. I think that the idea, I totally agree with what you just said, that there's the idea of meta-awareness, and it's not just around, kind of around your own values, being aware of what do you care about most. You know, there's a whole bunch of, like, on a particular environmental topic, like, how important is that topic to you compared to other things that you care about? And on what basis do you care about it? Is it a, you know, there's morality, there's economics, there's politics, there's purely the science of it. But being aware of why one thinks the way one does and is a really critical part of moving forward and trying to find common ground with other people.
Right. Yep.
It also cuts into...
I realize that we just have 2 more minutes left, and I just want to show you how those of you who want to know where to go to find more can go. It sounds like we've got a conversation here that might merit some additional discussion. But let me just quickly flip over a few slides. Obviously, environmentally responsible behavior is something that is an expression of the knowledge, dispositions, and competencies that we've been talking about, all within different contexts. And we've been alluding to that throughout this discussion. Social studies education and citizenship education, as well as environmental education, have been addressing this for years. And there are many different views on how to measure behavior, from self-reports that you mentioned a little bit ago to the kind of action competence that the Danish researchers brought in about 10 years or so ago. But let me flip on to I'm going to skip over the assessment slides that I included because we don't have time for that today. But let me go to the three or four slides over where the logos again show up of our funders. And in the document, Developing a Framework for Assessing Environmental Literacy, especially in Chapter 3, you'll see references that take you to the citations and the research that I've alluded to today. And all of that is at www.naaee.net/framework. And the final slide in my set shows a screenshot of that page on the website. And if you look down in the center of the screenshot there, you can see documents published by the project. And there's a line there in very fine print that says Developing a Framework for Assessing Environmental Literacy, Complete Edition. And that is, if you look in that document in Chapter 3, you'll see a summary both of a description of these components and the kind of research that's been done in each of them.
Okay, thank you very much, Karen. And so this does, I mean, it does lend itself to additional discussion. As everybody, most people know, I will be away for the next month. Scott Carley will continue to facilitate the call or arrange for others to facilitate the call. You might, if you want to continue this discussion, you might, Karen, have an email conversation with Scott to schedule that at some point so that you can continue to talk about this, potentially getting input for your process and informing the rest of the Climate Literacy Network.
Great. Thanks, Tamara. And just for the record, next week I will be at a Chinese Society for Environmental Ed meeting speaking about all this and other things. So I won't be on next week's call, but I would be glad to have additional conversations with all of you. I think it's a rich area of discussion, as you've all proven today.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much, everybody.
Thank you.
And we'll have another conversation next week.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye.
All.
Bye. Bye-bye.